and he looks at you with a straight face, and he says, Rabbi, you understand I can't learn much. So therefore, you must also understand I can't learn a little either. How do I supposed to understand this? And he gets bored with himself doing nothing. But the Yetzirah has him so fixed, he wouldn't let him go downstairs on that. It's amazing. These are miracles I see before. I mean, God blessed me to see miracles in front of my eyes. I mean, it's that the Jews, when they went out of Egypt, they saw miracles that saved people. I don't always see these miracles. But I see miracles of a sort. Mamish miraculous. How this Bocher himself is saying such absolutely stupid things, and things that he's talking sense. He's talking to the point. And not only that, but I should understand. It should be acceptable to me. Don't you understand? It's good common sense. I can't learn a lot, so I'm not there. So therefore, from that alone, to see how the Eitz Hara gives us a little turn and makes fools out of us, that alone should fill us with rage on him. Until when are you going to make me into a fool? You know, it says in Kohelet, this is a favorite book of many philosophers and old people, Ecclesiastes is called. Who talks everything is vanity, vanity, everything is vanity, vanity is all. It's true, everything is vanity. And there it says like this, that the Yetzer is compared to a Melech Zokein Uksil, an old foolish king. So the Gemara says he's old because he comes to the person. We learned this week's Pasha that God said, I'm not going to bring a Mabu anymore because Yetzer Leiva Odom Rami Nurov, his Yetzer is bad from the very youth. When do you think from the very youth? When does that mean? When does that mean from the very youth? Who remembers? You learn? He does. Huh? Not embryo, mamish.
When,
when he's born. Don't make it worse than it is. It's better not. Embryo. Okay. When his embryo is sitting and learning Torah with the malach. But as soon as he comes out, you hear this, Shmuel? As soon as he comes out, whether he's born in New Jersey or he's born in Argentina, makes no difference. He hates the Torah, speaks all the languages. He comes out, he's right there. Rashi says this, not my idea, it's not a Hasidic idea. Okay? Don't blame it on the Baba Shagat. Rashi says, from the Gemara, that Hashem says, the Yetzer, the evil inclination, is from the very moment he's shaken out from his mother's womb. That's some statement. From that moment, the person has a Yetzer. I mean, you can't even imagine. Some people would say, please, how about this? Be considerate. I mean, you have the little babies too. I mean, you think little babies are having Yetzer Hara. They're also not good. So who is good? If little babies, that's the purest thing there is. I didn't say it. It says, Mishanina lost his name. When the child is shaken out from the mother's womb, the very first cry, it says, I am here, serve me. That's what it says. That's the statement the Yetzer Hara keeps repeating a lifetime. I am here, serve me. Except when you get more sophisticated, then he doesn't say, I'm here, serve me. He says it in more cultured ways. Cultured ways. But you can recognize it sounds like, you know, very up to date and very and educated and so on. But basically, it all makes one statement. The statement is, I am here, serve me. So in Kohelet he's called Melech Zokin, the old king, Uksil, and he's a fool. Avram Selahim. He works on you pretty well, this fellow. Chaim. But you have another method, just puts you to sleep, period. He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't even have to make you talk, just puts you to sleep, that's all. He has it made, he can himself go and concentrate on somebody else. As a matter of fact, his Yitzhar works also on other people. I mean, he takes some more job. You know, people, moonlight or moonshine? Moonshine. Take extra job.
Moonlight.
Moonshine. Good, doesn't matter. I won't make me an Englishman anymore. I'm too old for that. So, Asami Yitzhakolas, they work overtime. So this fellow, what do you do? A plain fellow. Well, what advantage can they already make with him? You go to sleep, I'll go on somebody else. I have, you know, big fish. Out there, I gotta work overtime. So I join up with the other fellow in there, and we work on them. And we accomplish something. But this fellow was there, I'm putting to sleep. That's it. Finished. So he doesn't learn, doesn't doubt, that's it, asleep. Okay. And then he wakes up and says, oh. Alright. That's it. Melech Zokin of Ksil. Why is he called Ksil? He's a fool. Says he's an old king and a fool. He's a fool. We just learned now together that he's always the smartest of the guys. He's smarter than anybody in Harvard or Yale or Princeton or even in Rutgers. Certainly University of Pennsylvania. He's okay. So here he's called Melech Zokin of Ksil, a fool. So the Chachamim say, you know why he's called a fool? Because he makes other people foolish. That's why he's called a fool. Okay? In other words, he's called according to his work, not according to his personality. Personality-wise, he's very smart. I mean, he can get the smartest people under his wings. He can twist them around like a screw. Kings, philosophers, anybody. Deans, anybody. But what does he make him into? Fool. Makes him behave like fools. Makes him behave like stupid idiots. Huh? Pardon the expression. Don't pardon the expression. Don't make any difference. This is why he's called Aksil. Melech Zokin Aksil. So, David HaMelech says, May oivai techachmeini mitroisecha. From my enemies, I can learn about your mitzvah. What do you mean from my enemies? So playmate means, your mitzvahs make me smarter than your enemies. Than my enemies. My enemies want to get after me. I become smarter because through your mitzvahs I become smart. But the commentaries explain that meyoyvayt hakmeini means from my enemies I become smart. I look at them and I see how they do things. From that alone I become smart. When a person sees to what the Yetzer Hara can lead him, that alone should make the Yetzer Hara absolutely hateful to him. He shouldn't listen to him because he sees what kind of trouble he got him in. Also, meyoyvayt hakmeini, from my enemies. Somebody once asked a great Rebbe. He said, we see many wicked people succeed. And many good people don't succeed so well in the things that they do, the projects that they do and so on. So he says to him like this. Good people are synonymous with emes. Reshoim are synonymous with sheker. Bad people are synonymous with sheker. What is sheker? What is sheker?
Lies,
falsehood. But he said like this. There's a little bit of both in both. Of both things in both. Of honesty and falsehood. He says like this. The bad people, they assure him, they do their sheker, their false things, they do it with an emes. They are really devoted to their false things. But the good people, they do their emes, not with such an emes. The things they do are such emes. They're good things. They're true. But they do it not with total devotion. That's the problem. So like we said before, like the boy said, the Yetzer Hara doesn't have a Yetzer Hara. He, whatever he does, he's doing it wholeheartedly, Yetzer Hara. That's why he succeeds. He's the greatest success in America. It's proof. Not only in America, even in Belgium, France, in England, wherever you go, he's the greatest success. Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is not such a success. Why? Because the good things somehow are not done with the kind of emes that's called for. But the Eitor, he's doing his job on it. So the Eivishter has to help us, of course. Of course, we cannot ourselves handle it. There's no doubt about it. That's why we have all the tefillahs. We have the Eivishter to help us. And when we make the broch on the Torah tomorrow morning, look what it says. It says, the Rabboni Shalom, we ask you to make the words of Torah sweet in our mouth. We don't ask tzitzis to be sweet in our mouth, tefillin to be sweet in our mouth, anything, on any mitzvah, we don't ask for it to be sweet by us. We ask our heart should be attached to the mitzvah, but we don't have that expression, it should be sweet in our mouth. We don't ask that the matzah that we eat based on heart should be sweet in our mouth. We don't have such requests. Only for Torah we have a request like this. Officially in the blessing on the Torah. The harev no Hashem alakinu azivoy tegoskel pekinu. Please, Hashem, make the words of Torah sweet in our mouth. Why? Because without the sweetness of Torah, a person doesn't really get to it. When does a person know that he really learns? When he feels a sweetness in the Torah. And as long as a bocher is going in circles around the table, around the Beit Medrash, or a bocher asks me, when is this rabbi coming? I say, he's coming soon. Meanwhile, I see he's going back to the table and sitting down like this. I ask, why are you sitting like this? I'm waiting for the rabbi. I say to him, you know what? I'll also sit like this. I'm waiting for Mashiach. I mean, all the Jews are waiting for Mashiach. So what? So 2,000 years they also sit like this. And they are more sure that Mashiach will come than the Bocher knows that the Rabbi will come. Because it's already happened, the Rabbi doesn't come. Okay? Mashiach surely will come. It's a tenet of our faith. So what? We sit like this and wait for Mashiach? In the Bocher time we created some of our greatest creations. Why were we waiting for Mashiach? And this Bocher, just like the Sam Bocher, if they don't have a Chavar every minute, they're dead. They can't stand on their own feet. I know it's hard. It's not that I'm blind to it. I know. But there has to be a way that even while a person doesn't have a Chavar, he should try to get okay. But the time does not have to be simply killed because I don't have a Chavar, I'm waiting for one. We spoke about it many times. But it has to be repeated, because I see the same thing appearing over again. Certainly new people that are here. Basically, a lifetime people you're going to be learning on your own. You're not going to have Chaverim all the time. Okay? Not because you might be living in Sioux City, Iowa, but because your schedule might be different than another person's schedule. And if you find somebody you may not like his style, and you prefer learning alone, you have to learn alone. It's as simple as that. If you have a chaver, I'm not saying you should push away the chaver to practice learning solo. But if you don't have, or the rabbi isn't here, there's so much that you can learn yourself. What if Jadi sits back and say, I'm waiting for the rabbi to come? And that's already, he's already good. He's sitting in a bit of memory somewhere. The other fellow, he says, of course I'm waiting for the rabbi to come, but meanwhile I'm going to lie down. Huh? So he goes and lies down, and the rabbi already came, and the rabbi already left, and he comes out and says, where's the rabbi? So where were you? I was waiting for the rabbi. And this is not a joke. I am not manufacturing this. This is actually Bochrim here. Of course, it doesn't happen every day, thank God. But it did happen a number of times. The Bochrim went off somewhere. He came back hours later. He said, where were you? I said, well, the rabbi wasn't here. I didn't know when he was coming. So I figured until he comes. Until he comes, what did you do? I don't want to tell you what he did. Until he comes. Achayot. What does this all amount to? Is that we have to look inside here and ask ourselves, what is Torah? Torah is something that the yeshiva tells us to learn, that this rabbi or the other rabbi, or even the Lubavitcher rabbi tells us to learn. Torah is our very life. There is no other thing which is as synonymous with life, with neshama Torah. No mitzvah, no activity, no person. Torah is it. In any yeshiva you go, in any place you go. And if we don't somehow build it up within ourselves, the attachment and the practice and the satisfaction and the sweetness of learning, nobody can do it for us. No rabbi can do it for us. No chavrusa can do it for us. Israel cannot do it for us. It has to be done from inside, okay? The Eivishter didn't provide for any miracles for this. It has to be done. Prayer, yes. Together with work. Yosef, say hi, Yosef. I need some moral support, moral encouragement. Saying that was said in connection with Rav Akiva. Rav Akiva started learning when he was 40 years old. Until then, not only didn't he know any learning, but he actually disliked the people that learned. He disliked Talmid HaChacham. Because the Gemara says it is the nature of an Am HaOretz to dislike a Talmid Chacham. Unless he, of course, changes it. But basically, that's the nature. And then, it says that when he saw that water was dripping on a stone, and it bored a hole in that rock, then he knew, the Kal Vachomer, that if water can make a hole in a surface which is as hard, literally, as rock, certainly the Torah can do something to him. Torah is compared to water. So even if his heart is like a rock, which sometimes happens, not like the American way, because he's stoned. But, you know, he's insensitive, he didn't have it, he didn't care, whatever, you know. So the heart becomes like a, like the says in Lost Glory, the Abishah says, I will remove the heart of stone from you and I will give you a heart of flesh. So he says that he can also do it to his heart. If you start learning Torah, it's never too late. Start learning Torah, so he can do it to him. So people commented on this and they said that you can really argue with Rabbi Akiva. Many of you heard this before, but it's something that's worth reminding ourselves of from time to time. You can argue with Rabbi Akiva. What kind of a Kal v'chomer is he making? What kind of a comparison is he making? Because the water makes a hole in the rock, it means it will make a hole in him. What's the comparison? Maybe only in rocks it makes. Proof? Horses are outside the whole time, and it rains on them, and there is no hole in them. Even a very rainy place. We don't find that horses should have a hole because it rained on them. So a horse, it's soft, and yet the water doesn't make a hole. So what is the, what's the proof? Maybe only on rocks it does it. And on him it wouldn't do it, just like it doesn't do it on the horse or another animal. This is it's a kind of a queer kind of a question, but it exists. But the main thing is the answer. And the answer is like this, that the emes, it would make a hole also in the horse. The problem with the horse is that he doesn't stand long enough. He runs away. Whereas the rock stands right there. So the secret is how long you stand. The secret is how long you subject your heart to the drops of Torah. Through the amount that we learn is only drops. Compared to what the Jew can learn and what great Jews learn even nowadays and certainly in the early generation, what we learn is mamish drops. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, let's say at best the people here learn, let's say 10-20 pages a year. Well, whatever paper, whether it's Tanya or Gemara or whatever. I mean, there are people nowadays, contemporary of ours, who learned in Yeshiva, of course, you know, a longer period of time, and they learn hundreds of pages a year, hundreds. And they know it, no less than we know the couple of pages, maybe better. So what we do is we learn by drops, okay? That's the situation. It's true, God doesn't count pages, God counts hours, that's in our favor, fine. And we are lucky about that. If we put in the same time the others put in, our merit is the same. But as far as an impact, the more drops, the more it does. But the key to success is that the person stays underneath and lets the drops go on. But if he runs away, if he learns a little bit and then he runs off, or if you talk to him a little bit and then he runs off, it's like the horse. Nothing will happen. Not because he's so hard, he may be soft, but he's not there. So therefore Rabbi Akiva learned from the rock. And he was willing to make that commitment. And you know what Rabbi Akiva did? He was 24 years away in learning and nothing else. This means a commitment. Of course, this is something that very few like Rabbi Akiva has the world ever seen or will. However, in our own small little tiny little way, we get the message that the stick-to-itiveness is a very important secret of making it, which is sometimes the hardest thing to do. You can have plenty of people who say like this, today you want me to work hard? Okay, I'll do it. Whatever you want to do, I'll do work all day. But don't bother me the rest of the week. Okay? That's available. Okay? But what? Day in and day out? That's hard. The constancy and consistency is difficult. But that's where it's at. There is no substitute for it. There are no shortcuts. You can't do it just 1, 2, 3. As a matter of fact, many of us, those who are in the yeshiva for a short while, sometimes suffer from a certain phase which follows the initial phase of excitement coming to yeshiva. When a person first comes to the yeshiva, there's this surge of Torah and Kedusha that livens them up. But then the Eivishter wants him to do things on his own, and that's taken away little by little, like the summer passes and the winter comes. I said, Rav Richo, it's not the same anymore. I used to be excited. I used to be like a dynamo, and now I can barely move. What's happening to me? Huh? Am I in the right place? Am I doing the right thing? The answer is, of course. Because if you would be doing the wrong thing, you would still be excited. The excitement there are given for free, but not the excitement here. Here the excitement initially comes, because that's the nature of this light. But then it withdraws itself, slowly, slowly, until you will open it up again. You will strike that match again and make the fire again. That's the way it is. And therefore, of course it's hard. It's hard. But what's a man if he doesn't undertake a hard challenge? What are we looking for? The easy thing? Somebody once said the only thing that's easy is to stand in the shower, okay? And to take care of your needs if you happen to need it. That's easy, okay? You have to be polite in expressing this. And if a person is looking only for easy things, basically what he wants to do is just stand in the shower. But anything that's worth anything at all, even in Gashmis, Kavokam and Ruchnis, needs that effort. And there is something else that it needs. But we'll listen to Reuben. We'll take Lachaim before. Huh? Say Lachaim. You took off that bracelet already? Because of a good thing. Because of a good cause, of a good reason. What are you drinking there? Tea? Let's say everybody's sitting, everybody wants tea. What if you should drink tea all by yourself? Why not you? Either everybody drinks tea or nobody drinks tea. Get people jealous. It's a bad taste. We say, hey guys, I'm a malatizer. And you guys just think about it. That's fair. When people are in a group, everybody's doing the same. It's not right that one should be sticking out, he's doing his own thing or eating his own thing, whatever. Anyway, to practice what I preach, I guess I should do this also. Yeah? You're all welcome to it. It's all here, almost as brought. It says that after Tishrei, we get heavy packages. We get a lot of packages, we do a lot of shopping on Tishrei. That is, we take along great things from Simchas Torah, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, especially if somebody has the schus to be by the Rebbe. You take heavy packages. And then when you come home, you have to unpack it and see what you can use at every given time. Like a person goes to a big sale, a giant 75% off, and not like they do it in the store. So you first they make it 250% over, and then they make it 75% off. Where the sale here is mamish, means that for a very little effort in Chodesh Tishrei, one takes in treasures, gold mamish. And then you have to unpack it. This is for this time of the year, this is for that, this is a little bit Amuno I got, this is a little bit Bitochna I got, trust, this is a little bit I have Simcha, this is a little bit I have Yerushalayim, this is a little bit Avet Hashem, Avet Yisrael, all these things forever I knew, but it's big, giant valises. Well, I figured it just occurred to me that maybe it's so hard to take off because we have these giant valises. We have the giant luggage we took along from Chodesh Tishrei, and everybody's carrying these big packages, and they can't move. Well, certainly, the advice is not to drop these big packages, because these are fortunes. We worked on it the whole Tishrei. God poured it upon us. Each one took according to his, pocket, but still, everybody took a lot. Even by just standing there, one takes a lot. And certainly by trying a little bit, about it. So what's the thing to do? The thing to do is to open up and take all those things from there and put them in their right place. So they won't be so happy. You won't have to carry it all at once. Take out from the experiences of Chodesh Tishrei, and I'm sure everybody will think back. They'll know what they felt on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, the times in between. Maybe they were tough upbringing, maybe they met an old friend and they shared certain memories, certain remembrances, experiences, whatever. All these things are all positive, they're all good. If they were any negative ones, you don't have to recall them. But the good ones, the positive ones, take them out slowly, one by one. You don't have to carry all the big valises. Slowly. And then you will feel lighter and be able to take off. Something that we have to remember when we learn. is the Indian of Bittul. Now Bittul is a very important state of mind for learning. What does Bittul mean? Bittul means that I am not a giver, I am a taker. But it's not a taker in the selfish sense of the word. Like we said before about the Yetzer Hara, that as soon as the kid comes out into the open, he gives a big cry, and since then, since that moment, he never stops calling for attention and for help. Help me, I need. It's true. But there is such a bittul which is pure and good, and it also says, give me, but in a different way. What does it do? When a person opens up a Gemara, opens up a Tanya, opens up a Chumash, the way to approach it is, I am open, my mind is blank. Anything you want to write on me, write on me. Anything you want to give me, I'm ready to take. As opposed to a person learning something, I say, now let's see what it says. Now let's see if it makes sense. Let's see if I can figure this thing out. It's I who figure it out. And if I don't figure it out, it's not necessarily that it's my fault. This thing, as we spoke before, doesn't make any sense. I got it. I got the English. I know the translation. As a matter of fact, even the rabbi explained it to you. Still doesn't make any sense. When is this a problem? If a person comes and says, I am interpreting this. Not that this is teaching me. Not that this is giving me. Not that this is speaking to me. I am not a judge. My mind is a plain, flat tablet. You can write and inscribe on the Torah whatever you want. This is the idea of what we say before Shemoneh Esrei. Hashem Sfosai Tiftoch. God, open my lips. Ufi Yagitin Losecha. My mouth will say your praises. What do you mean Hashem has to open your lips? You can. Since when do you need help in opening your lips? You keep your lips open all day, you don't stop talking. And here you come to Shemoneh Esrei, you say, Hashem, please open my lips. What's this, pretending? Playing games? The answer is that ideally, when a person comes to Shemoneh Esrei and God is standing before him, that's the position of Shemoneh Esrei. That's why it's silent, that's why it has to be standing, that's why he can't do anything else in the middle. He can't show any emotion to anybody and so on, answer anything in the middle. But he's standing before God, mamish before. Ideally, a person has to be so overwhelmed with God's presence that he can't open his lips. Like in other words, let's say for example, the rabbi would call you over and say, listen, I want to ask you something. What happened yesterday in this and this place? I mean, if a person has any feeling, any sense in him, he would be speechless. Of course, there are people here who I know for sure won't be speechless. Because they never at a loss for words, the talking always goes on. And because they always feel they have good things to say or smart things to say, they keep talking. And I doubt very much whether these people would be even overwhelmed if they ever called them up. Okay? But most of us would. Imagine this is the Eibishter himself. We don't see it. Okay? But ideally, because of the strong faith of a person, he should have that feeling. I cannot open my lips without you, God, helping me. Therefore, I'm not pretending, I'm saying Hashem's what I did to open my lips. How dare I open my lips in front of you? Who am I to talk to you? Can anybody go over and talk to President Reagan? Who's just a plain guy? Anybody here trying to go over and talk to President Reagan? Peres, Shimon Peres from Israel, is happy if Reagan invites him for 15 minutes. He's just a plain guy. Today he's in, tomorrow he's out, and there's nothing to it. But he's a rule. God gave him a rule. God gave him power. God gave him glory. And we have to respect him. That's the rule of the Torah. Yes, definitely. As a matter of fact, when we speak about Hashem, we compare Hashem to a ruler, a human ruler. Because that's what we know. Imagine now Hashem, can we go speak to Hashem? So ideally we have to have that feeling. That's called bitter. It means you're going to be quiet? No, of course you're going to say. You're going to take the whole Shemoneh Esrei. You're going to ask for the things that you need. But there is a feeling of bittul. Same way when a person comes over to learn Torah, it has to be the same kind of bittul. Of course, you can't maintain that feeling all the time, otherwise you can't get into the logic of things. But the approach has to be, the Torah is teaching me, not I am trying to see whether the Torah talks sense or not. Of course, I get the information, I learn from it. All right. All right, true. But that's not the same as saying, I have nothing. Let's hear what the Torah says to me. And the Torah actually speaks to every one of us. And that's why people in the Jewish tradition, they are sefer, they are gemara, they are tani, whatever, was truly their best friend. They conversed with one another. It wasn't like a dead thing, you take a book and you read. The gemara spoke to them, they spoke to the gemara. And the gemara was their most precious possession. Or if it was a chosid, it was the tani, or it was another sefer that somebody clung to. But it was something personal. And of course, the gemara didn't ask him, he asked the gemara. That feeling of bittul is very healing. And it's very cathartic, which means it's very cleansing. It cleans the person from a lot of schmutz inside. And some of us don't have it. Some of us just don't have it. But not only that. Yesterday, the Rebbe spoke, a mamish akvaldik is asked. I was so excited when I heard it. Even though I didn't hear about it, about if I'm bringing fast enough in my house to get this. I didn't hear it. I heard it on the whole time. The Rebbe spoke, and he brought out a Moed Kizab. When we think about Torah, it targets our imagination. And we really can't figure out how it works, but we know it's there. Look, I'll ask you an example. A simple question. Paro says, I don't know God, and I'm not going to send the people. Paro says this, okay? Statement in the Torah. Is this statement holy or unholy? Huh? It makes you want to say it's holy because it's in the Torah. And yet, in your mind, say, but why should it be holy? It's Paro's words. He says, I don't know God. How can that be holy? Huh? Very strange. The Rebbe yesterday spoke that Torah is this meiridic thing, for lack of a better word, something that's really way above us. Even though by God's grace we can understand some of it, that the Torah can speak and give over words of reshoin, of the worst kind of people. The Torah, the Rebbe yesterday described Paro as being worse than idol worship. Not idol worshippers, worse than idols. Because idols recognize that the God is a God above the God. They are also God and God is above them. And Paro was worse than that. He said, I don't know any God. I'm the greatest. There's nothing great. That's it. And then, of course, but he's human. And he sometimes has to go to a certain place. So we know the story. He was a smart guy, or he thought he was. So he went early in the morning to the river, all right, to make a BV. And then Hashem says to Moshe, you go right there. Why are we doing it? Catch him by the ass. And so I know your secret. To me, you're not a God. He's just like anybody else. You have to go to the bathroom location. Huh? But Paro, imagine this, how Yitzhak can make people foolish. He pretended for the whole of Egypt that he never has to go to the bathroom. No. Frank is here. That means the Yiddish, I ask you, is that smart? To pretend for a whole nation to have to go to the bathroom. And, but he has to go. So he goes to the river before all the Egyptians get there. Hashem says to Moshe, go meet him there. It never occurred to him. All of a sudden, no Egyptian ever got up early enough to come there. Moshe Rabbeinu comes there. He comes there just in the middle while he's doing it. He's there. You can imagine how embarrassed Paro felt. He didn't. He still spoke with the same aggressiveness. He's it. He doesn't know anybody else. He's the God. But the Rebbe said that Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the highest level of Atilus, Moshe Rabbeinu's neshama is the neshama of Atilus. It's the highest neshama, highest level. He's standing there and speaking to Paro, who is the lowest of the low. These two meet. The Friedrich Rebbe's father, Rebbe Rashab, once went to a park. And he sat down on a bench. He was tired. And on the same bench, another person was sitting there who didn't look to be such a kosher kind. So the Rebbe remarked, I think it was his son who remarked, or he himself remarked, he said, this is Olam Hazeh. And one bench could be sitting at Phillips and Shosh Klippers at Nate. That's it. Well, Olam Hazeh is such on the same bench, he can have the highest and the lowest sitting on the bench. Well, anyway, so the Rebbe brought out this, that the Torah is so great that it can be at the same time at the highest level. Moshe Rabbeinu is in the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is Torah. And he is standing in Atzilus, and he's talking to Paro, who is the lowest of the low. And it makes sense in the words of ordinary people.
because it's made for ordinary people to read. The Torah is not just made for Kabbalists, for Mukabbalim. It's made for ordinary people to read and understand and celebrate that we were victorious over this gruesome Russia of a Paro. And yet at the same time, it's totally based in the highest levels of godliness, which means that it could be that even what Paro says, even though down here on earth it is the most evil, yet it is part of Torah. Not because this most evil becomes part of and becomes holy. The evil doesn't become holy. It's because Paro is only an expression down here below of something higher above, of a spiritual entity higher above, which is expressed in the physical through Paro. And higher above, it is something which is totally good and totally pure, but are coming down somehow through Tzimtzumim or whatever other kind of transitions, it could be Paro. As a matter of fact, in Hasidus there's a discussion of Paro, certain things of Paro, that the source of Paro is from a very high source. Because according to the rule, that whatever is very high falls very low. And since Paro fell so low, that shows what his shayrish is. And you can see he made it. He spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, how many of us would give mamash everything we have to speak 2 minutes to Moshe Rabbeinu? Paro spoke to him every day, no problem. And Moshe Rabbeinu was begging him something. How much is that worth? Because Paro ultimately, and the highest, so what does it come out of Torah? It means when we learn Torah, it's not just a matter of, I found a Messiah, whether it's mine or it's not mine, I found it in a wall and it was rusty when we learn a Messiah, or if I find it in a rubble, in a house that's rented out, or with those people learn Subbas, whether they give class, they don't give. All these things are really speaking about totally ruchnistic matters. And that's why everything is Kodesh Kodosh. But because of its greatness, it's able to come down and have a good sense in the physical material world. So when a person learns Torah, it's not a question, well, I got to get a Jewish education, I got to see what the Torah says about this, about that. It's not Jewish education. You're dealing with the highest levels of godliness, the way they came down and got into Gashmias, but didn't stay in the Gashmias. At the same time, they're still connected, intricately connected to the highest levels of Ruchni. That's Torah. That's why Torah down here has the same Kedusha as Torah when it was up there. It didn't change. That's why it says that Divrei Torah not Mekabel Tumah. A person who is the worst kind of Tumah can learn Torah. Tefillah is a question when he can die. But Torah, there's no Tumah in Torah. Anybody can learn Torah. Right, then we learn with that late. We have to make a bracha chrona, those who have to, a few minutes. And Mir Hashem tomorrow, as I said before, if you can't come to the 7:30 class, it's fine as long as you come to the davening. And if you want to volunteer, in Mir Hashem close to 8 o'clock, there will be some classes here. I can't tell you about all the classes, but one or two of Lineda, they should be here. And if you can make it, good. If you can't make it, we understand. So the rest of the day shouldn't suffer from it, and the rest of the day should be good. Because as hard as the beginning it is, that's how important it is. It's very, it's mighty important. You know very well yourself. A child develops slowly, but whatever happens at that time is very important. Because a small little, God forbid, a small little thing at birth comes out to be a terrible tragedy later on. God forbid it shouldn't happen to anybody, not to a Jew, not to a girl. So the beginning is really very important. Same thing with Rosh Hashanah, and the same thing with the beginning of the year for learning. As hard as it is, that's how important it is. And when you come, first of all you have to say to yourself, what am I doing? Second of all you have to say, I better be doing what's right because it's affecting other people. And if I'm a little bit of a better bacher, it's affecting more other people. And if I'm relatively new here, a beginner, it affects other beginners. And I carry the responsibility for it. But if I do things right and I help others, then my schus is tremendous. Because there's nothing more that the Eibishter likes than somebody who helps others. Whether it's through his own example or through his effort. So therefore, we all hope that the Eibishter will help us to get into the right spirit, to learn the way we have to, to daven the way we have to, and to care for one another in the proper spirit. If we see somebody is sort of, you know, hanging loose, he doesn't seem to find himself a place, should go over and try to help him, try to accommodate him. Because basically, the very fact that he is here means the Eibishter has sent him to us to do something. That if by a leaf is Hashgacha Pratis, imagine by a human being. So we have to do it. And maybe he's waiting. In many cases, you know, a bracha comes. The rabbis can't do much. Yeah, there's a certain resistance. You always think the rabbis want to make him work too hard, they want to make him frum, they want to make him have a long beard, whatever they want. But another bracha goes over, he's not threatened. He doesn't feel threatened. You know, it's like a chaver. It is a chaver. And he means his best. Not fooling him, Chas V'Shalom. That can work. But you gotta have the concern. You gotta have the care. You gotta feel, what if it's your brother, Mamash? And what if it's you? Wouldn't you want somebody to come over? And Taki take your hand? Oh, he's a Shremadlo, right? He needs to hold, that somebody should hold his hand. He's a welfare case. What can you do? There would be no welfare cases. New York City would be empty. That's also part of the population. What can you do? Everybody can be independent, self-sustaining. You have to help. And that's the biggest good that you should help us. Chaim.
Chaim.
This thing you don't know, but if I'm not too hard to sing it, maybe you can catch on to the tune. It's a very interesting nigun. It's very easy to sing it. I learned it to my rabbi, my mashpia. It's a Polish nigun. Re ra ha ha I ya ha ha I ya I a ha ha I ya ha ha I a ha ha I ya 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 I ra ha ha I a ha ya ya I re ra ya ya I a ya 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 I re ra ha ha I na I a ha a ha יואים שמחתכם ומיידיכם וברשיכות שיכם
says to him, Rabbi, what should I do? I don't feel like learning. I don't want to learn. What should I do? Said the Tzemach Tzedek to him, I have a bigger problem. What should I do that I want to learn? Says Rabbi, what do you mean? What's wrong with that if you want to learn? If you want to learn, there's no avodah. There's no avodah. It comes like a person wants to eat. I mean, it's a shaitan to give him rewards for eating. He wants to eat, he eats, but you have to reward him for it. Is there a bonus in it? There's a service in it. There's an effort in it. You want to learn. It's the best thing in your life. You want more and more of it. Says the Tzemach Tzedek, I have that problem. I want it so much. You are lucky. You don't want it, and you force yourself when you learn. This is the real thing. That's exactly what David wants. So those of us who have a hard time doing it, attack him. Not that they work on it so hard to be lucky. But the fact is, cold man is there. Like it says in the scissors, even though we are trying hard for Mashiach,